Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of the Hip Hop Social Worker Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Scott. Today I'm joined by Zadora Williams, LCSW. Let me put an emphasis on the LCSW.
Hey, hey.
She's a therapist, social worker, living in Portland, but comes from the Midwest. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the people.
Hey, everybody. As you said, my name is Zadora Williams, and I am just another phenomenal Black social worker out here serving the mental health needs of our community.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. You know, I like to, you know how I like to do, I like to give everybody a chance to tell their story. So, you know, how did you get into this journey of, like, social work, you know? Or let's talk a little bit about like, you know, how you came up and things like that.
Yeah, so definitely being raised on the east side of Chicago is what started me. Before I even knew I wanted to be a social worker, that's what started the social work journey. Being a youth, always seeing gang violence, seeing some of my friends who were in the foster care system, being abused, being neglected, and definitely just seeing folks within the school systems as well, just always labeling us as bad.
Yeah.
Labeling my friends as bad. And I'm like, they're not bad. Actually, if you kind of took the time to find out what's going on, you would know that they're not bad. They're misunderstood, because a lot of the kids growing up in my neighborhood, they experienced a lot of things. Parents were addicted to drugs. Some of them didn't have food at home. Didn't have anybody to love and nurture on them. So, of course, you would see some kind of acting out behaviors. But I didn't really see folks in my school in the time to really check in with our students.
Yeah.
To see what was going on. And my house was always the place of refuge on the block. My mama was like everybody's mama.
Yeah.
So... I kind of seen them social worker values through my mom, just always caretaking for the kids in our community. We went somewhere, it was never just the five of my mom's kids. It was always us plus some.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It could be 10 of us, it could be 8 of us. And that's kind of that role I just kind of nurtured into was, yo, this is a problem. And seeing the way my mom would try to solve it and try to meet those needs kind of gave me the foundation of, I knew I wanted to kind of find out what was going on more in-depthly as far as why are these kids behaving the way they are? And how do the things that was going on around them, how was that affecting the way they were behaving? So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That sounds like, you know, a lot of social workers probably have that same background coming up. Like, I didn't see a lot of people reaching out, you know what I'm saying, when I was coming up. So let's be the change, you know. So, but like before, like, you know what I'm saying, you got into social work, did you know a lot about social work?
No, actually, I have to thank the Black community for definitely making me stay away from social work.
Yeah.
Because that was the one thing I constantly would hear, even when I would talk about, you know, my dreams as a kid of what I wanted to do, not knowing that it would lead me into the psychological realm of things or the mental health side of things. But it would often, I guess, sound like something a social worker would do. And every time I would be encouraged, like, don't be a social worker. You know, they don't get paid and they snatch out babies. Don't be no social worker.
Yeah.
So I definitely was not on the path. I didn't know much about social work. I went the psychology route as far as getting my bachelor's. And it literally wasn't until I started applying to grad schools and looking at psych master's programs. And I was like, those don't really fit. They don't really fit what I wanted to do. And I decided, I was like, you know what? I've been closed-minded to social work all these years based off what other folks were saying about it. I was like, let me take a peek. And I was like, yes, this is me, okay? So that's how I was like, yeah, it's time to make that transition, and I'm going to be the social worker that's going to be the different social worker.
Yeah.
Than what we have been associated to be.
Mm-hmm. I can feel that. Yeah, I feel like it's the same, like, that's the only thing I knew was CPS work. It was like, social workers are CPS workers, you know? But going to grad school and seeing how many other, like, you know, realms you can work in was kind of helpful too. I really didn't even know, like, I want to be a therapist, like, as far as, like, until, like, you know, because I always wanted to be a CPS worker.
Mm-hmm.
For some, I don't know what, I had some weird-ass goals, you know what I'm saying?
You were so... You was going to get a man change, wasn't you? You was going to change that system.
Yeah, I was going to try, but, you know, after learning more and more, I'm like, God, I think I'm good on that one, you know, so... So, like, what kind of things did you see, like, in Chicago that kind of, like, you know, that kind of happened to us systematically, you know, to where you was like, hey, I got to do something different for my people?
Yeah, just the lack of services, mm-hmm. like, zero. I cannot recall within my community 10 blocks over, and I've lived quite multiple places on the east side of Chicago, even on the south side of Chicago, and I just rarely seen people getting help. I cannot recall any substance abuse clinics within my neighborhood, but we had so many liquor stores, there was never any discussion of therapy. So that was also like non-existent in my neighborhood. And just seeing the result of, okay, well, we're all living here and there's limited resources, and just knowing and also hearing from some of the from the gangbangers in my neighborhood that would talk about why they sold drugs or why they were doing things. And it was often because it's like, ain't nobody trying to hire me.
Yeah.
I got a rap sheet. I've been in juvie, you know, since the age of 12, and I done been incarcerated as well. So it's like there was no outlet. There was no hope.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think people like who aren't social workers and aren't really like in tuned with like the systematics of, you know, community trauma and things like that, fail to realize that, you know, like, if you don't want me to do these things that you consider to be so bad, I mean, they are pretty bad, but you got to give me something else to do.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just say do good and I'll be like, all right, I got you. You know, cause in nature, you know what I'm saying? Like, people survive, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to survive no matter what. And if I got to go, you know, take these chances to do some jail time, you know what I'm saying, to provide for my family, people probably going to do that, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the lack of services, like, we definitely need more services. Is it getting, like, better around there, or is it still kind of, like, struggling?
Last time I went and visited my old neighborhood where I grew up, It looked like a war zone, to be honest, for real. Like, yeah. The buildings, the homes that used to be on my street, a lot of them was tore down. A lot of them had burned, boarded up. So the community that was there when I was there was non-existent. Uh-huh. It definitely drastically changed, and not for the better. Now, yeah. When you go come a little bit south, where a lot of gentrification has been happening, yeah, you see the difference, because you actually see white people in my neighborhood. And that was non-existent when I was growing up. I didn't know white people exist outside of on TV, because I never seen them in my neighborhood whatsoever.
Yeah, I can feel that. So I have the show Shameless.
Uh-huh.
My issue with Shameless is that I don't know. I've never been to Chicago, but I heard so much about Chicago and the South Side of Chicago. And my thing is like, so you telling me that y'all filming this show in the South Side of Chicago, you can't get no black people in the show?
And there's plenty of them.
Yeah.
Plenty. even with current protests that was going on over the last couple of weeks, I was so shocked to see white people on the east side of Chicago marching down the streets. And I was like, never have I ever in my life seen that. Like, I didn't even think they knew the East Side existed.
Yeah. Well, they're here now.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, boom, you get into social work, and you really do the emphasis on the mental health, psychology thing, you know. How really did you, like, build your practice up to, like, you know, to really, like, hone in on the mental health of our people?
Just learning about, like, our history. Like, with psychological harm and the things that has been inflicted on us, and how that kind of plays out today.
Yeah.
So just being aware of what we are actually up against and the way in which we've been conditioned to deal with, whether that is trauma, whether we're not processing our emotions, and just knowing the effects of that, and also being a person who also is on my, I'm on my own healing journey, and being able to see the benefits of, wow, when you have that information, when you know that there is a different way to process and handle these different stressors that we're kind of plagued by. It's like, okay, change is possible. Like, whoa, they've been telling us therapy wasn't for us for so long, but therapy can definitely be very beneficial and helpful with helping us be able to get past or manage some of the things that we experience that is not serving us well and putting us in a mentally low place.
Yeah. What do you think the disconnect between Black people and mental health therapy is?
The disconnect is race.
Okay.
Race, our race, and the beliefs about therapy. So, because our race kind of is a barrier.
Yeah.
And it's used as a barrier as to, no, therapy isn't for Black folks. Or, that's what white people do. We don't talk about our business with people we don't know.
Yeah.
You should keep your business inside of your home, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So these kind of generational norms of the way we've been functioning has definitely played a role in Black folks seeking therapy or even being willing to try it out. And then folks not believing, like, how is talking to somebody really going to help me through? I'm dealing with A, B, C, and D. How am I talking about that going to help me?
Yeah.
So that's where I see kind of the connect is definitely through just it being having to do the work to remove that barrier.
Okay. I was going to ask that. So the next question, you know, say what kind of things do you do to kind of like help, break that barrier down?
Well, I'm at those any major Black community events. I always table at them.
Yeah.
So that I have the opportunity. I'm catching people when they come and they in a good mood because it's a festival or it's some type of Black celebratory event. And they come back and I get to chat with them a little bit about mental health and about therapy, just breaking down what are some of the myths. Like, oh no, going to therapy don't mean you crazy. No. Like let's do away with that. And talking to them about the benefits as well as just having how you can prioritize yourself by engaging in therapy. Like that being one thing you can do for yourself. And I normally connect with people. I'm a lively, energetic person, so I'm always dancing and, you know, just trying to spread the awareness in a way that can resonate with our folks to where they're like, okay, yeah, you know what? That sounds like that's something interesting, or that's something I could give a try. And just encouraging them, like, hey, even if you don't think you need it, you can always set up a consultation just to see if it could be beneficial to you. It doesn't mean you have to start therapy, but, you know, just familiarize yourself with the process.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to show up and have the awareness and those conversations, you know what I'm saying? So, because a lot of us just don't know, you know what I'm saying? Or we have like these preconceived notions of like, well, like you said, it's for crazy people. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're telling about your business, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's your business.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, it is tough because, you know, I still work with a few, you know, teenagers that that aren't really into all that, you know what I'm saying? Like, they still like, nah, I'm good, you know what I'm saying? I don't do treatment, you know, I think I had one that told me, like, I don't really do group, so I'm just here to do my job. You know, so I get it, but, you know, just, I try to get creative, you know, like, try to find things that might appeal to, you know, to everyone, you know what I'm saying? Like there's I use you know, we call them mentors, you know, you know, where I work at. It's like it's kind of been through the things that these younger youth have been through, and I try to really like lean on them, like, hey, I need this to happen, you know, so I need these guys to come to the group and talk about things. Can you role model that for them? And like, yeah, I got you, you know, because you know, because the older youth have been through all this stuff, so they're like, yeah, I'll help you out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they see
it's all about speaking their language.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and they see the benefit of it too, you know, because where I work at, it's like you could be up to 25, you know, okay. So like 17-year-olds and there's 22-year-olds. And 22-year-olds are like, you know, they're mature and they've been through all these groups, you know, so I really try to lean on them to kind of help, you know, model some of these things that I try to get across.
Exactly. Hey, you got to use them. Use them folks that can really connect with them. Because sometimes they be like, you old. Even though we not really that old.
But yeah.
Like, I can't trust that it is what you say it is. But when they hear from somebody that's in their lane, that's a peer, that's definitely a good motivator of, all right. Oh, you tried it? Okay. I'm going to give it a try. I can give it a try.
You know, so... you mentioned healing, you know what I'm saying? Healing was a word we hear a lot, but it's not really like kind of definite definition for what it means to heal in the term of like mental health, you know what I'm saying? Could you like break down like, you know, like what healing means to you, or like kind of like the kind of overview of what it means to heal?
Healing means just taking time to check in with yourself. And nurture yourself. If you're finding that you're holding on to, whether that is some emotional pain or some traumas or things like that, taking the time to actually process them, not just leaving them to lie dormant and just cause and wreak havoc on our physical health.
Yeah.
So being able to slow down a bit and see the purpose of, hey, you know, when my stomach hurt, I take time to heal that. You know, I might take some anti-nausea medication, or I might use some herbs or anything. So when I think of like mental health healing, it's like, okay, I'm gonna just take some time to sit. I'm gonna sit with my feelings. I'm gonna sit with my thoughts, and I'm gonna explore them. Because if I'm experiencing some type of roadblock or I'm feeling some type of turmoil within myself, I'm always checking in and like, why? Why did I just react like that? Yeah. What would cause me to do that? So for me, mental health wellness for me and healing is actually slowing down and asking the questions why, and not judging what comes up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some of them whys maybe not, I don't want to hear them.
Yeah.
I know them, but it's like, oh man, yeah, okay. That might not have been what I wanted to hear in that moment.
Yeah. Like kind of harsh reality, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or the hard truth, you know?
Exactly.
That we got to deal with. Yeah, so, I mean, people always talk about healing, you know? And healing is different, you know? Like, for me, things that I do, like, I feel like I got to process things out loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, get, like, the healing that I need in some situation, you know? Like, but I've been used to being so passive that there's things that times where like I just kind of let things go, like whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me, like time kind of heals it. But if mm-hmm. I gotta address it, then you know, like I got like I can't email you, I can't text you, I gotta have a conversation. You know, what I'm saying I'm calling you like, hey, let's meet. You know, and let's, you know, or like, but like you said, you know, taking the time to figure out, you know, what I'm saying, like what you need to do. Like this past few weeks have been crazy, so you know, calling in to work, you know what I'm saying, kind of just being away from the stress, you know, removing yourself from that kind of hostile environment. Because I work with a lot of people, you know, a lot of white people who really really just don't understand like kind of like what it is to kind of be in a place like that, to kind of be like a black person in this kind of environment, to where like, and then you got people with such as like these opinions that are so like hurtful, they just kind of blurp them out, and you're like, and you got to kind of live in that situation, you know. So it's been rough. So taking time away, disengaging, you know, not really being as friendly as I used to be, like kind of being willing to like do things that I would usually do. I'm kind of like, nah, I'm gonna just chill today because I just don't want to see certain people. I don't want to hear certain opinions. I just don't want to do it.
We got to protect ourselves in those environments. Because, baby, when I was in the hospital, you already know what unity looks like. We be far and few in between. And actually, before we were at unity, I mean, being in Randall's, I was the only Black social worker out of a whole hospital system for children. I'm the only one that was Black.
Yeah.
So definitely, I'm like, healing for me in those environments was like, sometimes protecting my peace.
Yeah.
You know. So as you said, coming in all friendly, now I may not have time for that chitter chatter today because I may not be at capacity to tolerate some of the comments y'all make or some of the microaggressions y'all be throwing out there. No.
For real. You know what I'm saying? So how was it like this past few months with this, you know, the COVID and the police brutality stuff coming up again? You know what I'm saying? This ain't new. People always say this is new. This ain't new. This has been happening for a while. But like, how was like your caseload and your work looked like since this, you know, since we've been doing, you know, having all these things happen?
It's looked very booked and busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm not accepting folks right now because it definitely, the demand has increased. Like, I'm still, even though my Psychology Today profile says I'm not accepting folks, folks are still sending those emails regardless. Like, hey, just when you do, can you reach out to me? I see it says you're not accepting any clients, but so people are definitely reaching out for services more. I've been getting a lot of consulting gigs and speaking gigs since the police brutalities and these murders. A lot of organizations are asking, what can we do to support our Black staff? What can we do to support our consumers? How can we be more aware of our biases? So the consulting gigs have definitely been increasing, and I am appreciative of that.
Yeah.
But our folks are just heavily affected in many different ways. Like, I'm working with a kid who, since COVID hit, I mean, they tail in the line of agoraphobia.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave their house. Don't want to leave their house. And I'm like, oh man, this is not where we were at pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Not where we were at. So just watching and seeing the different effects that this has had, I mean, folks are really grappling with how they're grieving, with not being able to grieve in the traditional ways that we are accustomed to grieving, you know, gathering, having a full-on funeral or after-pass ceremony, being able to hug on each other.
Yeah.
So that's been definitely rough, having to hear people experiencing that and knowing that you can't just say, go on out there and hug them. Just throw a big celebration anyways, you know?
You gotta be careful. So, but I know us being practitioners, we take on the double because we gotta heal, but we also do our own healing. You know what I'm saying? How have you kind of like, not like, how is it not like, you know, overwhelmed you to kind of work in this, in this realm of work that we got to do in this current times?
And I did get overwhelmed and I took a week off.
Yeah, okay.
Like when tensions were high and I was going through my own process, as I was seeing the same violence against us that we always see. And I'm like, it always triggers me early on. And then I have to get my process and recenter and ground myself to be able to show back up in space. So when I started noticing that, I'm like, I'm not feeling like I could be the good container, and I don't want to be in the session necessarily making it about me and what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
So, you know, I took a week off, and I just strengthened my spiritual practices. You know, I was engaging, and I've been attending this Black Reiki healing circle. So I've been doing the things that can keep me well and keep me going to show up, such as meditating, taking time, trying to get more sleep, because it's definitely been an exhausting last couple of months.
I'm checking in.
Shoot, that's why I'm checking in, talking to my peoples, because I'm feeling like it's not an isolated thing. So actually taking time and talking with other Black therapists, other Black social workers, has actually been helpful in processing and just like, okay, yep, we in this together, so how we gonna love on each other? Yeah. What you need this week?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I remember you reached out to me. He was like, hey, what's going on? You know, what's going on? We got to figure this out. So I appreciate that. You know, that's something that we get so caught up in our own world, you know what I'm saying, that we realize that, you know, we all here together, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we're trying to keep our, you know what I'm saying, our, because it's double, you know what I'm saying? You're dealing with the same kind of traumatic experiences that your client got to deal with.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's just like, but the, you know, like, the difference is that, like, I got to, like, be strong enough for the both of us.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm. whoever. I got to be very, like, very mindful. I've been making sure to be very mindful because, you know, I mean, being Black, of course, I'm going to share in that experience with you, yeah. but making sure that I'm not putting my personal thoughts and beliefs that can be, you know, that can be triggering or that can get in and be like, oh my God, yes, that is, you know what? I'm going to go and tear down this industry right now.
Oh.
You know, being mindful not to add fuel to the fire, yeah. but also giving them that reassurance, like, yeah, I do get it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're experiencing it and we're watching it right here with you, but my role in that, in this time, is to help you process. And to yeah. help you find your way to healing and to keep going in your resilience, tapping into that so that you don't have to be disabled by what's going on.
For real. But this shit is hard, you know?
It is.
So, like, I know, like, you know, racial trauma, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of stuff that we've all dealt with. It can be small, it can be large, it can be medium-sized, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like, how do you kind of help people navigate through, like, those racially traumatic moments in their life, you know?
I always encourage them to try to find what it is that you can focus on that centers your joy, that can center happiness. Because when we are focused on the racial trauma that we experience throughout our life, you will find yourself in that deep, dark hole and not knowing your way out. Because it's just like, when you think about it and you keep processing that same information and it's like, oh, again? Oh, then it's another time and another one. Oh my God, they just killed a Black baby. Oh my, you know, it just,
yeah.
It would make you feel grim. It would make you not want to have children. It would make you not want to live. Like, yeah. there are people that do not want to live in this world, in this existence right now. So helping them to be able to find their resilience and to know that, yes, this is happening. And yes, these things are traumatic. How do we move through it? So I've been encouraging folks, like, I'm on camera. I'm like, hey, with my young folks, we doing TikTok dances. You know, we be in session dancing because I'm like, you have to move. Let that energy flow and visualize yourself releasing it out back into the environment. Go outside. Go do some grounding and meditation out there. Sit on the ground. Go touch a tree. Give that tree that energy that you feel because the tree can handle it. That tree is nice, strong, it's rooted. You know, just giving them different practices where they can go and practice, okay, how do I release this? What do I do with this? And encouraging them to get rest.
Yeah.
Because, baby, when we sleep deprived and experiencing trauma, multiple traumas back to back, like, it's really easy to go from a stable place to an unstable place and be in a mentally compromisable situation. So I just help them find a way to keep going. Like, yes, this is our reality. This is what we experience, finding ways that they can fight against these injustices, as well as, hey, doing it on your own terms. You yeah. know, you don't have to fight one way. You don't have to fight the way the larger society fights. Your fighting could be taking a nap. Like, I'm a rest so I can show up for my children. I'm yeah. a rest so I can show up to work and be in my right mind, you know?
Yeah, okay. I appreciate that, that breakdown, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes, like, I watch or listen to a lot of, like, you know, social workers talk about things, and they just so heavily, you know what I'm saying, are speaking in jargon. I get lost in it, you know what I'm saying? Even though I'm a social worker and I understand yeah. it, but it's like, sometimes, like, it's just too much. But I feel like you just broke that down, you know what I'm saying? Especially, like, saying, you know, like, your father might be taking a nap. You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey,
it
really might be, you know? So
exactly. Like me, like when all of this was going on, I was pulling weeds. Like I went out my backyard, baby, went from a tropical forest to half empty.
Yeah.
Because I know I need to release that energy and that anger that I was feeling. But I don't want to be in my house punching walls. I don't want to be in my house throwing stuff because that's how angry I feel. That's how rageful I might feel. No, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go and take it out on the land. I want these weeds gone. I'm going to use that energy. And it was definitely helping me center. Because at the same time, I'm out. I'm breathing fresh air. I'm moving. So I'm moving and watching, just releasing the tension. And I mean, you can make it symbolic. Shoot, you just plucking out all the racism in our society one by one. So, you know, I'm all about using our environment to help us heal.
Yeah. Because
it is. It is nature, baby. Nature is the way.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Again, becoming one with nature. That's helpful. What do you feel like, or how do you feel like about, like, you know, like now, you know what I'm saying, we're focusing on defunding the police, but they're trying to, like, replace police with, like, social workers, you know what I'm saying? Kind of like, it's kind of like what they always do, you know what I'm saying, like, when school's struggling.
We always the go-to for everything, ain't we? You know what I'm saying? We're supposed to fix everything.
So, like, how do you feel about, like, that kind of band-aid approach, you know what I'm saying, just throw social workers in there and see what happens.
Mm-mm, not for it.
Yeah.
I'm not for it because it's not well thought out, and you're going to be putting social workers in a place that they're not in a position to handle. Like,
yeah.
As a whole, you know, you do have to come up with an infrastructure. And just to say, okay, remove the police, throw social workers in there. No. But the process of, hey, let's not call 911 when there is someone who we think might be experiencing some mental health challenges, or there is a crime being committed and that person might be affected by substances or mental, or having some mental health challenges, then yeah, what's the number you can call for that, where there's already a system in place, there's already an infrastructure of trained social workers who do crisis work. They can definitely handle those situations quickly. So I like that, rather than saying replace them with social workers, it's just, hey, having an entity or having an organization that has mental health professionals in general that you can call to help navigate those different crises.
Yeah, because what if a social worker shows up and, you know, makes it worse?
Exactly. It's like, I like that y'all throwing us out there, but y'all kind of throwing us out there.
And there's still social workers who think like how the police might be thinking. Well, if you weren't doing nothing wrong, I wouldn't have been sitting talking to you.
I mean, we see that in the school systems.
Yeah.
I mean, they operate just as the police do. They're just as biased. They see Black children in the same light that all white officers see. Well, not even just white officers. I'm going to say officers in general may see Black folks.
Yeah.
They see us as a threat. So they engage with us with excessive force. And you see the same with white social workers in the school system, white educators. They see Black kids and they see them as a threat. Somebody you have to be harder on. Somebody you have to punish more.
Yeah.
So, we would essentially have the same systemic problem that we have with the police. We would have it with social work because we know it's a white rule field.
Yeah.
Dominated by white folks.
Yeah. So but that's what I feel like. Like, before we start infiltrating other systems, how about we figure out our own system? You know what I'm saying?
Hello? How about we address the white supremacy and the institutional racism up in the field of social work?
Yes.
How about that?
Well, anywhere else. Let's start.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like, if I was like consulting a police department or a city hall or something, I could see how that could be helpful. But I don't know if I want to be coming out to no home visits, you know what I'm saying? When it's, you know, like not in that kind of hostility, because like I said, I might show up and make it worse. You know what I'm saying? You never know. So
Exactly. It's okay to consult with us. I like the ideal of that is consulting before you're entering a home.
Yeah.
With these preconceived notions or these biases that might definitely end in someone dying, someone being murdered. So it's like, yeah, that's what needs to happen. There needs to be more consulting. Because if they ain't going to train them, at least consult with trained professionals on how to engage and how to address and deal with the situations when folks are experiencing a mental health crisis or, you know, having some substance abuse issues. And it's an issue with that.
For sure. 100%. So you're like many of us. You're not just a social worker and a therapist. You're also an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You know? I know you was doing like private practice even before you got like, you know, licensure and all that stuff. So like, what kind of pushed you to like just take that leap and say, you know what? I'm in here. I'm out here. I'm not going to wait for this. I'm going to do it. And, you know, in disclosure, it is legal for MSW to have private practice in the state of Oregon without a licensure. So before anybody comes in. But what kind of encouraged you to kind of just take that jump and say, you know what, I got to do it?
Working in community mental health.
Yeah.
Working in one of our largest providers that regarding the African American community and just seeing that band-aid just be put on and there not being any extensive healing. So just being, like I said, in community mental health and working in one of the organizations that was serving African Americans and just seeing that band-aid model of literally it's about the dollars. Get them in. And slap the band-aid on them. There was no deeper level. Like there's no way to really do some deeper level when your funding structure change and they're telling you, oh, you can only do this amount of individual sessions, but they can have as many group therapy as they want. So just seeing that and knowing that I'm in this line of work because I want our people to actually heal. I don't want them to be in therapy for 20 years. Oh, they've been coming to this place 5-10 years. No, I want you to get what you need and then transition. Get what you need, transition, and then when you need a tune up, come back. So that's just what encouraged me is the way that I genuinely want to help folks heal. Yeah. You know, it's like I can't do that. Working in an organization and going by their rules and how they want you to provide care. So I was like,
I'm out. Yeah, I'm starting to get to that. To that vibe too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like just seeing it doesn't really change. You know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't really, especially because it's like you're buried under so much like this policy and whiteness and you just like, how can I really do anything real when you always revert back to like, oh, well, hold on, before you do that, this has to be in place. That has to be in place.
Exactly. Fill out these documents. All of this paperwork that they care about tracking. And it's like, why? Y'all know the numbers going to be the same as last month because y'all not really allowing us to provide treatment that actually may be beneficial.
Yeah. You feel me? So, I was curious because, you know, I think one day I'm going to do it, but just kind of, you know, and I already know it's a grind. It's a whole bunch of other things. How do you take care of yourself? All this strife and stuff we're dealing with.
But pretty much going to my own therapy.
Yeah.
Having my own therapy session. I always like dance. After a stressful day, I come home, I dance, I throw on my music, I'm dancing at night, meditating. Like, I always have my little sage, my smudge sticks, and I be cleansing the environment and trying to center myself. And talking, you know, just talking, checking in. Like you said, like, I'm a talker. That's how I process things. So,
right,
making sure I'm checking in. Talking to my spouse, talking to my best friends, and just relaxing.
Yeah.
Relaxing. Like, I'm an essential oils person, so I'm always concocting something in my bathtub with some oils, and then just being intentional. Intentional and knowing, like, hey, I'm about to take me a cleansing bath. And, you know, I even give myself instructions as I'm doing these things so that they actually can manifest and happen. Like, when I get in that tub, that stress I felt, it's just going to start melting away. It's going to start melting away, going into the water, and just, I'm going to feel more at ease when I get out of the tub.
So leave it all there.
Exactly. Watch it go down the drain. Bye-bye, stress.
Yeah, cleanse it. Yeah, I love that. Okay. Well, I appreciate you for joining me on this podcast. You know, is there anything you want to tell the beautiful listeners about, you know, what you got going on?
Yes. So you guys, please check me out. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook at Sankofa_CFH. And that is for Sankofa Center for Healing. And I just like to encourage folks to be the healing you want to see in your family and your community. So knowing that one person doing a process on their journey to healing, you're going to spark that light in others, because they're going to see you living well and thriving and be like, you know what? I like that glow. How you doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, I started taking care of myself. I started taking care of my mental health. I'm doing these things. So, yes, be encouraged, people.
Yes, I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I will be in touch always, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But, you know, we got to hold it down for us, you know, for the culture out here in Portland.
Man, you talking about private practice, and I'm already strategizing on how I'm snatching the people up. So,
yeah,
because I need a team.
Yeah.
I need a team of trusted folks who I know can do the work and actually care about our community, and not just that dollar sign or that bandage. So, I'm setting up the infrastructure. So, you know, don't be surprised when I hit you up, like, bro.
It's time.
Make that transition.
Man, I know, right? I gotta do it. I gotta quit playing the game.
You do. Because I'm telling you, the demand is there. And you will be full.
Yeah.
That, whether you want to be part-time or full-time, you will be full.
All right. Well, shoot. We'll talk about more about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate you. And, stay up.
Yes, likewise, brother.
Peace.